Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by two of what used to be known as Fleet Street's finest, Davey Walker, Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror. Now, David, you covered Manchester United in the Fergie era. What would he think of the current crew?
I think he'd be impressed with the start they've had. I did think of Fergie on Friday night when the Giants marched out at Old Trafford, because I thought of the other side of it. There was a famous summer when he went watching one or two of the young kids he'd been told about, and he saw them run out and he didn't realise the little ginger boy was called Paul Scholes, and his actual quote was, "Gosh, what were we doing signing midgets?" And you looked at it the other side on Friday night, and I can't remember a Manchester United team as physically tall or with so many players. And I've got to say that the power they've added and the quality, because Bailly at the back looks a good player. I must admit, you know, I'm surprised by some of the things that have happened with Fellaini staying in there. But you see Pogba and Ibrahimovic, and they do look quality signings.
It looks also a Mourinho team already after two games, doesn't it?
Yeah, they look defensively efficient. Bailly, as you say, is an excellent signing. Probably, perhaps the lowest profile £30 million player you'll ever see in your life. But I think as far as United were concerned, they only really needed tweaks. Last season, theirs was the joint best defensive record in the Premier League, but they couldn't score goals. 49 goals, one of the lowest in the top half. I think only Stoke scored fewer goals in the top half. So they needed an injection of quality up front. But Zlatan not only brings quality, but he brings authority. He brings a winning mentality, an ego. I think as far as United are concerned, there was an authority about the way they attacked, and it was shades of Sir Alex, the way they had Southampton, a competent team themselves, pinned in during the second half. They were searching for that second goal. I think Rooney's delivery was fabulous. I think he's had a lot of stick, but he did put in some superb delivery for that goal. And I think overall, you look at United and you see a team that is going to be challenging.
Yeah. You know something, Mike, you saw it, and it wasn't all the time, it wasn't consistent, but at times when they attacked, particularly with Martial on the counter, they went with pace. And one of the great things from Sir Alex's teams, Man United really would attack. You know, it was
Gibson,
the old goal
for Chelskis, was
absolutely, it? And then through to the Ronaldo days, and some of the great goals, you saw them hit on the counter, and you just saw a sense that that could be coming back.
And Zlatan, that was a proper centre forwards.
Oh, absolutely,
wasn't it,
absolutely.
Whenever I watch him there, I'm seeing the ghost of Cantona already.
Yeah, and I've got to tell you, and forgive me now, I'm not trying to dampen Arda down, but there were two or three times where with flicks in midfield, he gave the ball away, which on occasions Eric did and will get rebuked by certain people like Roy Keane at the time. And Eric actually got better at Manchester United in return. So Zlatan was fantastic, gets the goals, looks the part, maintains that incredible goal-scoring run. He must be so full of confidence.
Yes.
But there are one or two things that I'm sure Jose Mourinho will just be flagging up about. Against better teams than Southampton, we can't afford to lose the ball there.
He's won the league in his debut season in six countries. And there is a lot about Cantona, about him, in the way that other players will respond to him. Mm. Other players will take his lead. He's not afraid to say what needs to be said. When they did the flash interview to our colleagues at Sky TV afterwards,
There was good chemistry between him and Pogba, wasn't
it? Pogba, that's right. And he said to Pogba, look, next time you've got to pass to me. That chance you had later on, you've got to pass to me. I'll score it. You know, he seems to have nudged Wayne Rooney off penalty duties as well, which didn't really get a lot said afterwards. But he quite clearly is someone who relishes the pressure. That's what United need. Rooney's had a clear run at it for some time and hasn't really responded to it. Zlatan embraces it, and that's a key reason for me why I would edge United ahead of City. Zlatan is a winner, and he is someone who is going to lead Manchester United back to the top for me.
What about first impressions of Pogba?
Very, very impressive. I mean, in many respects, throughout the game and the parts he did, he was the equal to Zlatan, but without the goals there to round it off. I thought he had a good game. I just think that commercially, you know, Manchester United's directors and whatever must be sitting there thinking, how did we lose this guy? And I know the issue is then Fergie's the breakdown in relationship between Alex Ferguson and the agent, and yet the same agent's trousered supposedly £20 million for bringing him back. And you just think, this is the mad world of Premier League football.
But
now,
you know, I've seen a lot of this, and I look at Real Madrid, a club that's let guys like Wesley Schneider go, and another top guy. They can't all play, you know. And I think, you know, we've written stuff about, you know, United have let Pogba go, Chelsea let Lukaku go, they let Matic go, they brought Matic back, they're trying to get Lukaku. That seems now to be tilting towards Everton. But I think as far as Man United are concerned, their view will be, even if we have paid so much money for him, he's arrived, and as you say, he looks a commercial monster. He's 23 years old. He's got 10 years ahead of him. If he can add goals to his game, he will be worth the money. But commercially, to the territories where they've been flagging, United will be back where they want to be. And Pogba himself, I think he will help United to win the title. I don't agree with the people who say he looks a bargain already, because for him to be a bargain, you know, he's got to score those three chances, and then he might look like a bargain. I think at the moment he looks good, and it's a decent debut performance, but there is still a lot for him to prove to become the game changer that the sort of guy like Gareth Bale or Ronaldo would be.
Now, you talked earlier there, David, about the mad world of football. Mm. I'll give you two words.
Go on.
Hull City.
Well, now, I'm deeply impressed with what Mickey Phelan's done there. And
of course, he's playing Man United in the BT Sport
game.
Absolutely,
next week. And the fact is, Mike, aside from the chaos engulfing that club and the challenges with so few players, Hull have won the first two games as a newly promoted team. That's the first time it's happened since 2002, when Bolton Wanderers came up. So you think of all the teams that have come up in between, nobody has managed to win two games as Hull have just done, and Hull have done it amid all the chaos, all the madness of not enough players. Now, I've seen in football, and you've seen it, sometimes, and it's particularly with clubs in administration and financial straits, dire financial straits, where it almost unifies the team and they actually can get together as a group and almost really relish defying the odds and what's going on. And I think that can happen. Normally, when you come out of administration, they all become singular entities and want a new contract and look after number one again. But I do sense Mickey Phelan, who's a really smart lad, he's had a great background and worked with some very good managers and coaches, not just Sir Alex at Old Trafford, but right through his career from his Burnley days. He's a cute cookie in knowing what's going on. I think he'll pull that together. What happens, say, October time, the transfer window's closed, if he's still in charge in the staggering on, I still fear for the long term. But nobody could have asked more of him and that group of players. It's not just Michael Phelan, it's the way the players have responded.
Those players, I was speaking to a coach last week, and he said, what you've got to remember is players love a bit of trauma. They respond to trauma.
Yeah.
Within that group, who's most impressed you?
Well, the midfielder Sam Clucas has done very well. Jake Livermore slid into central defence particularly well. Yeah. Looks like he's found a natural position through adversity. I think Tom Huddleston has shown a lot of leadership as well. They took a picture just before the start of this season. Just the 13 of them.
That was on the tour in Austria, wasn't it? Yeah,
absolutely, as if to say. And there were, you could see the camaraderie, the bond between them. After matches, they've got the team huddle and they're all basically reaffirming their commitment to the cause. And there were quite a few of them. Abel Hernandez providing the cutting edge up front, scored a second goal in as many games at the weekend. Ludicrously, he's been linked with Aston Villa. Why would want to go to that basket place of a club? To be fair, he is in one now. But I think that they have something there, special.
The other thing, you reel off some names there, and they're very good names. Those are players like Tom Huddleston's one, Livermore's another, who you said you've seen them. We've all seen them. What promise they had.
Yes,
Curtis Davis is
absolutely right. And you end up with them being probably bigger clubs are better clubs than Hull City, and yet becoming squad men and sort of on the front. Now they are right in the middle of this, and the pressure's really on, and they've responded
to
it. I do think there's a part of this where the nature of the, you know, the chaos at Hull City is now forcing that, and they deliver on it. They're great.
But they need bodies in this week, surely, don't they?
Absolutely. I wrote about this for the Daily Mirror a couple of weeks ago about Steve Bruce, concerned at the lack of bodies and the unwillingness of the chief, the vice chairman, Ihab Alam, to bring in permanent signings because they are trying to sell the club. The owner, SM, is in poor health. They want to sell the club on. But who is it? Well, you know, I think, funnily enough, because of the camaraderie that they're showing, I think it will attract players. I think players will want to go there. I think they will see the application and the appetite from the squad and the individuals within that squad and say, actually, I do want to be part of this. And they aren't such a poor proposition as people make them out to be. And they aren't dead certs for relegation. But Bolton side, you mentioned, they stayed up by 4 points in that season, 2002. It is possible for Hull to do that. We saw with Leicester last season, people write you off, you just go on proving them wrong. That's what Hull are doing.
At the other end of the financial spectrum, Manchester City. John Stones already looks a prototype Pep player, doesn't he?
Yes. I've got to say, I felt at the time they paid over the odds for him, for a lad who last season ended up either on the bench or being a emergency right back for Everton. You're thinking, but Pep's had the vision and they've been at it for ages.
Round peg, round
hole. That's right. Got to do this, and this is where he's going to play. And the boy appears to be responding to it. The fee doesn't appear to trouble him at the moment. And they have set off in terms of the Pep revolution, and he clearly is changing things. We've seen he's changed the on-field style of play. Probably even more challenging for players is the off-field style, as in reporting for games at 9 a.m, you know, being there right through the day. They think they've finished when they've played the game. No, they've got to report them for a meal together, etc. Load of things in terms of the personal discipline that I think most, and I say this, British footballers, don't doubt that some of the lads who come in from Spain have had a similar regime, but I think it will be a challenge, and it will be interesting to see in terms of the time they spend on the training ground and the time he demands from them on match days, how that goes.
Key is, do you want to learn? Do you want to be a true professional? Now, there are really good signs from Raheem Sterling that he's responding to that tough love, if you like.
Yeah, he couldn't get an assist to save his life last season. He's had 3 in the last 2 games, and he does look like a player reborn. Lots of people had said maybe he would be one that Guardiola wouldn't fancy. I couldn't really see that because he is still very young and there is still a lot to work with there. He's got that pace. He's got the eye for goal that we saw at Liverpool. So there was always an asset if he could just restore his confidence, which he looks to have done
since
he arrived
there. But he's come back, remember, on the back of the Euros,
yes,
where he's been the biggest whipping boy for all the frustrations
of
England. I mean, ironically, you've two there with him and Joe Hart, both to be picked up, and one of them has responded and the other looks as if he's been dismissed.
And the interesting thing about Joe Hart is that, as you say in your question, do you want to learn? Well, Guardiola says, if you stay, I will turn you into the kind of goalkeeper that I want you to be.
Yeah.
But Joe Hart obviously feels he needs to play and is going to go elsewhere. Is that a good decision? I mean, listen, I'm not one of these people who feels that Guardiola's been really harsh on him and that the treatment is disgusting. He's said to him he's let him know where he stands and he said, look, at the moment, you're not for me. You can be if you want to stay, but if you don't, there is time for you to go and find another club. I think that's relatively fair. I was at Watford against Chelsea at the weekend. Conte, when he was speaking to the Monday journalist, said, I like to tell players the truth. That way, when the football is all over, I can look them in the eye and say to them, look, I was honest and I was open with you. That's what Guardiola's done with Hart. Whether it's really up to Hart to decide what he wants to do, but it's quite instructive for us in terms of English players. We thought Hart was the best thing since sliced bread. He quite clearly isn't, and he has some way to go as far as Guardiola is concerned.
It's been ever thus, isn't it? Big managers make big decisions.
Yeah.
Carlos Bravo, eventually, it seems, is going to turn up.
Yeah.
And he will be the first choice. Joe Hart, if you're in his position, would you stay and fight, or would you go to Everton, who are going to give you a lifeboat?
Well, I'm not sure Joe will want to stay and fight if he's not going to be in the first team. And I've got to say, if I was Joe now, just parking the incoming signing of a
Chilean. It's not going to affect his England place. You know, no. Sam Allardyce has already said he's going
to
pick him.
No. But what would get to me if I was Joe was that Willy Caballero has been preferred to me, because you're not bringing one in to say, Joe, you've got competition. There's a guy who's been perceived and inside the club is seen very much as Joe's inferior, has been preferred to him. Mm. So in effect, by signing another one, does Joe go to being number three in this? That's the problem. So that's why Joe go.
But that's part of the mechanism to get out of the club.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
I've got to say, I'm not too sure that Ronald Koeman will steam in and buy him. I think he could stick with Stekelenburg. I think the way they're looking and what Everton have got, and I think Ronald, from we did a column with him in the during the Euros, I think he's got a view of how he wants goalkeepers to play as well. And I'm not sure if Joe fits that blueprint.
I would agree with that. I thought I saw Stekelenburg last week in his opening game. He was fantastic, pulled off some match-winning saves. He was decent again at the weekend. He was one of the first players that Koeman moved for when he went to Everton. He does like an authoritative goalkeeper. He managed to have one of the best defences in the Premier League when he was at Southampton. And I think in Stekelenburg, a lot of people are dismissing him almost and saying Everton are going to move for Hart. I would imagine on the basis that they would be able to pay for Hart, although £30 million, so a 29-year-old doesn't make a lot of financial sense to me. But I think as far as Stekelenburg is concerned, I think he's Koeman's man, and I'm doubtful that he would pay for Joe Hart to go to the club.
Can I say one other thing about Joe Hart as well? Much as, and you said about the perception we have in England about him, and he's the main man and what he's done and established himself, that isn't the view they have in continental Europe about Joe Hart or English goalkeepers. Mm. They think he's very robotic, muscular, big, solid, etc. But in terms of what the demands are now of modern goalkeeping, he doesn't fit the blueprint of what they're looking for.
That's such a good point. I know you want to move on, but I just want to throw this in as well, because I agree with that. I remember when we were raving about a young Jack Wilshere, great on the ball, fantastic vision, eye for a pass, whatever else. Guardiola at the time said, we got two or three of them in the B team. You know, I know you guys love him, but to us, he's not that special. And I think this is an instructive period for us as far as Hart is concerned. We see him as so far superior to the other goalkeepers, but he isn't. And I think it's a reality check as far as Guardiola and Hart are concerned.
Another person coming out of City looks like Wilfried Bony now.
Yeah.
It looks like he's going to go to China in the January window to, you know, with his big wad of cash.
Yeah.
West Ham want him on loan until then. That probably makes sense for both sides, doesn't it? Given that West Ham have got this massive injury list.
Yeah, I think the big issue, well, from the West Ham point of view, it makes total sense to get replacements in quickly, especially if you can take a view at it and where we're going to be in the January, if you've got that, and he may move on. I understand that this probably three or four star men at Man City who are now reviewing where they're, because they're not seeing life in the first team squad in, you know, match days. But you've obviously got Nasri and Yaya Toure are in that, and another one is Wilfried Bony. And from what I hear, Wilfried Bony is of the view, I want to play football. Mm-hmm. I want to actually get out there and be playing. I think the other two I mentioned, Yaya and Nasri, may well sit tight and just say, we'll run the contract down or take the wages here. But remember, and Manchester City have done this, for instance, with Scott Sinclair when they let him out on loan. If he goes out and the clubs can't afford his wages as a loan, you can bet Manchester City will be subsidising the loan anyway. So, Wilfried Bony, don't cry too many tears of how hard at Wilfried's going to be if he has a 6 months or 4 months or whatever on loan somewhere.
Yeah, he won't be driving a lorry to Swansea, will he? he won't.
What about West Ham, and specifically Andy Carroll? Now, Bilic, it seems to me, is losing patience. He can't trust him anymore, can he?
I have to say, I was very shocked by the comments from Slaven Bilic at the press conference. He looked genuinely annoyed about the Andy Carroll situation. And for him, and he's a very mild-mannered, guarded fella. So for him to say, he drew an imaginary circle with his finger and he said, when you plan around one player and he's injured, always, and you can't count on him. For him to say that is quite something. Andy Carroll, who uses social media, he'll know how the land lies, he will have watched that and he will have been struck by that. Mm. He's out for 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury. He had most of last season wrecked by injury as well. He's a luckless footballer because it just seems to follow him around. Where the West Ham
luckless or lack of conditioning?
Well, it's a good question. And I think he certainly will have to look at the way he looks after himself on the basis of what's happened. I think West Ham will have to look at the training regimes, although I know they've spent a lot of money trying to get to the bottom of his problems, and to and they had believed that they had done that going into this season, which is why they weren't willing to listen to offers for him going into the current campaign. But I would imagine now, based on what he has said, and I must just tell you this, my understanding is that they didn't want him to play in that game against Astra Georgiou, the first leg, last Thursday. They felt that Ashley Fletcher should have played in that game. Carroll had a slight niggle ahead of the Chelsea game, but they thought it was a gamble worth taking. Against Astra Georgiou, they didn't, and they felt he should have had a week to recover to so that he could play against Bournemouth. So there is a little bit of sort of head-scratching behind the scenes.
But, you know,
but I think as far as Carroll is concerned, I think he now has a bleak future for me. Even when he's fit, I think if they get a good offer for him, I think he'll move on.
So I spotted yesterday that Andy Carroll's tweeted about how, you know, he's gutted that he's not playing. And
yes.
He's, you know, good.
I'm a 15 to 20.
Well, that was the bit that got me. The I'm a 15. And I thought, hang about that. That doesn't. And of course, he did break the 15 goal barrier in one season. And it was in the Championship with Newcastle when they came steaming back up with Chris Hughton's team. But the one thing for all his talent, and, you know, let's be honest, Andy Carroll has a talent. His big problems are you can't rely on him to stay fit, as in long term. He's never done that. And two, he's not a prolific goal scorer unless he goes down to the Championship.
I think you meant 15 to 20 game this season.
Well, even so.
Oh, you could doubt that, yeah.
But your point about Boney, the two dovetail, because Sam Allardyce wanted Andy Carroll. He talks in his book about it. You talk to people at the club. Allardyce was absolutely determined to have him. And a few years ago, they could have signed Wilfred Bony, a couple of years ago, for around about £8 million. They had a deal done, and Allardyce said, no, I want Carroll. He had a very clearly defined way he wanted to play, and he wanted that to be based around Carroll rather than Wilfred Bony. So, obviously, they're not going to buy him. They're going to try and loan him. But we talk about players going back to clubs eventually and whatever else. Boney is that man that should have been at West Ham a long time ago, and now obviously he's going to come and maybe get them out of trouble.
Now, Darren, you saw Chelsea probably get away with it at Watford, didn't you?
They were horrendous. they were really bad, and I think obviously Kapu's goal, fabulous strike, 10 minutes into the second half, only a matter of time. But Amrabat down the right-hand side had Azpilicueta, who was a decent fullback, on toast. Adlin Guardiola played really well. And I think Watford were full value for their lead. But they got out of trouble because of poor goalkeeping from the goalkeeper, Gomez, who completely lost his focus towards the end of the game. And Batshuayi came off the bench to score the equaliser, and Costa scored obviously late on. There is obviously something for Chelsea to work with, but I would not get carried away in believing that suddenly Conte has sprinkled his stardust on that squad of players and that they're suddenly world beaters.
Costa, you know, another late goal, another question to be asked, a very familiar question, David.
Yeah.
Should he have been on the pitch to score the goal?
No, he shouldn't be. And one of the points in Robbie Savage was hammering the desk about this at the weekend. And I've got to say, I sympathise with Robbie on this totally, which is, I support a referee's clampdown on dissent, without a doubt, and the assistant referee's linesman, whatever. If we're going to have it, it's got to be consistent. If we're going to have the things about grappling and shirt pulling and hauling, it's got to be consistent. So it's no good a referee at Stoke versus Manchester City spotting things and giving everything. And it's no good, and quite rightly, and you could argue if you're a Bournemouth member of management, that the sending off of Harry Arthur was a critical part to what happened at West Ham.
That was a 0-0 draw.
Absolutely. It may well have been. You know, who knows? Mm. But it certainly didn't happen. Now, I think Harry Arthur deserved his booking in the first half for the dissent. So it leads to what happens next. Now, you look at those and go, OK, that's fine. We are in a world where the referees are supposedly analysing all the video footage of these decisions. Well, then you've got to look at some of the Diego Costa, whoever the referee said, how do you accept that? How, yeah, that the tackle the other night on the West... You know, he should have been an automatic red card. The ball's the far side. He's just gone playing into the back of him. It's not a second yellow. That can be a red
flag. Do you know what's
it's
interesting
reckless and dangerous
about what you're saying, David? I was at the pre-season meeting held by Martin Glenn was there, Mike Riley was there, Sean Harvey from the Football League, Richard Scudamore from the Premier League as well, and they were telling us about this so-called one-game solution. And they were telling us, these aren't new rules, we are just going to be harder on the rules that are already in place. And we asked them, because obviously we're tweeting and people were saying, oh, it will never last. And so we asked them, what about consistency? This comes around every year, it peters out. We had the respect campaign, we had this, that and the other over the last 15 years, and they said, we will work hard on consistency. They said, obviously with these new things, the word that Mike Riley used was recalibration. He says it takes a bit of time to recalibrate. In other words, it probably go up in smoke. Mm. But it is fascinating to see, and the match that you talk about with Diego Costa, it wasn't so much the challenge on Adrián beforehand. Costa challenged the decision and he put his hands on Anthony Taylor. Yeah, yeah. And under the rules, Mike Riley said that is a yellow card. He should have been carded. Yeah. He put his hands on Anthony Taylor twice. Now, they may split hairs and say it was a non-aggressive fashion. Well, actually, it was while he was challenging a decision. So you would deem that to be aggressive. Yeah. So for me, it is consistency. It is an unwillingness to actually impose the rules as they said they would in the right way.
The danger is, Mike, that we're dealing with this now. And by October, say November, will it have all evaporated? And here is the other one. Let's say, and I hope it doesn't, in particularly about the dissent and the way players are. Let's say we've got the curb on this and on blocking people and grabbing shirts. Have UEFA adopted the same thing? Mm. I've not seen it. So, for instance, our players go into Champions League games and you're playing some high-profile match. Are they going to get... I mean, I guess Bonucci and co at Juventus will still be masters of the dark arts, so set pieces, etc. In that sense, we're playing it into the hands of the opposition.
And talking of those dark arts, Giorgio Chiellini has been linked with Chelsea. I'd love that, wouldn't you?
Please make it happen. Yes, but you see, it's interesting. Costa obviously Conte wants a bit of devil in his back line. He wants that kind of experienced campaigner to almost worry attacking players out of it, and he would be one of those players.
He's a very good player. So, I mean,
he is a very competent player.
He can play and he does read the game brilliantly, so he's got a lot of virtues. But given where he has been taught the game and where the way he's been brought through there, you know, they are not shy at imposing themselves on people and bending rules, are they?
Now, this is the last weekend before the international break. Yes. For me, one of the standout fixtures is Spurs against Liverpool. Mm. Liverpool, completely, terminally inconsistent. Tottenham did well. Janssen played, gave him a bit more of a dimension. How do you see that one going?
Well, the Liverpool thing, I think, is very interesting in terms of Jurgen Klopp got the 6-year deal, which sort of came out of nowhere in many respects, but they made this long-term commitment to. Looking at the game that they had at Burnley, the single biggest fact wasn't the possession, because possession doesn't win you games, you've got to score goals. It was the fact that for all that and for all the 18, 20 shots, attempts at goal, they never got any breakthrough. And then you look at the way that they're still so soft at the back. So
they looked like Arsenal, didn't they?
Yeah. And look what they did to them the week before, sort of thing. So we hail a new dawn at Liverpool, and haven't they played well this week? And then you see that and you just despair. So somewhere in there, for me, you'd look at it and go, do you know what? We're playing away at Burnley. We should have at least come away with a 0-0 draw if we've not scored. But that's where you're looking at the frailties at the back.
Mm. What about Tottenham? You know, obviously a club you know well, Darren. Does Janssen give Harry Kane a bit more options? You know, playing in that slightly withdrawn role and the number 10 role. What do you think?
I think he does. I think he'll find his feet. He was very unlucky at the weekend and missed a sitter. But I think what Mauricio Pochettino said afterwards is that he is going to try and find the formula that enables each of them to get the best out of the other. I think if he wants to play one striker, he can play with either or. If he wants to play with both strikers, then as you say, he could play with Kane in a more withdrawn role. If he wants to play with Dele Alli behind one of them, then Alli is, and when Alli certainly came on, he provided a superb pass for Janssen to get in on goal. So, yes, I think he does. And I think he is the player that they needed because there had been so much emphasis on Harry Kane. There'd been so much pressure, actually, on Harry Kane. And he delivered, to be fair to him. But they needed someone to take that pressure off him. And I think Janssen, even though he hasn't scored in the first couple of games, the fact that they've won and that his misses haven't cost them points, that is still a good thing. Because I think his confidence will still be high. He had a great record in Holland for AZ Alkmaar. I think that will continue here in England.
Mm. Look at Leicester and Arsenal. You know, already 5 points behind. I know it's only two games. We've got Arsene Wenger now almost speaking like a chief executive rather than a football manager. And part of it is saying media pressure influences the fans. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he's right. It does. But he can affect the media. He puts himself or induces media pressure. So you end up with what I would deem a self-fulfilling story. So at the end of last season, there were the reports of the campaign they wanted for change, you know, and they wanted Wenger to go. And then the club were very, very strong in the fact that when it was the demonstration, was it 10%? He said there were only 10% in the stadium, so it was so small it didn't really count. You know, they're very noisy, but there's not a lot of them. So then you look at it, and the way Arsene talks it up and implies that it could lead to his downfall, it will do. That is where he's going, but he knows what he's got to do. The team's not good enough, Mike. That's the simple fact is, we keep being told by Arsenal, you know, senior officials, they have got money to spend if Arsene wants to spend it. And if he genuinely believes that the squad he's got is good enough to be at the level that Arsene Wenger in particular, who is a winner, he thinks that's acceptable with what his view is, his vision, so be it. But I don't think he does.
Mustafi, the Valencia defender, has been linked £50 million. Now, is that the price of Wenger's indecision?
No, I think he is. I think as far as Mustafi is concerned, he's never quite sure. When other managers are very decisive, they look at a player a few times and they make very quick decisions about whether they want them. Wenger, quite clearly, to have left it this late, hasn't been quite sure about Mustafi, and I think he's only really gone in hard for him because of the injuries that he's had that have made bringing him in a priority. Koscielny, he was a gamble. You see the papers after the game at the weekend, and he says it was a gamble, but it paid off to play him against Leicester. Mustafi, I don't think he's quite sure about, but I do think that if you were to bring him in, he would have that come on. He would have answered, first of all, the questions from the fans, because they do believe that they do need an experienced centre-half. Mustafi himself is a very capable player indeed. What they need up front is an injection of quality. Lacazette is scoring goals for fun, but he won't pay the money for him. Now, if I'm perfectly honest, I'm in both camps here, because I can see Arsene Wenger saying some of the money flying around for footballers at the moment is just ridiculous. £30 million for they were quoting for Troy Deeney the other day, 13 goals in the Premier League last season. Yannick Bolasie has gone for £30 million, 9 goals in the last 2-3 Premier League seasons. Some of the money flying around is just, people are saying, oh, well, he could have bought Gonzalo Higuain. He's nearly 30 and the guy has scored, look, he scored goals in the Italian league. But 70, 80 million pounds. I mean, goodness me, I'd like someone to sell my house, please.
But Darren, I'll tell you one thing, and this is what, you know, I hear on the grapevine from other scouts. The amount of work the Arsenal scouting network are putting in across, I say, the global sort of perspective, particularly in Europe, they've got really good groundwork done, and often to the brink of having some players who are now, you know, international names. They were there, they're on the plate.
And then Wenger's not sure.
And Arsene at the last minute backs off.
Well, it's paralysis by overanalysis.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Arsene, the truth hurts. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.